Hey, welcome to Razzle Dazzle, a podcast about video games and pop culture with an emphasis on the video games.
All right, it's Razzle Dazzle time. I'm your host, Jared.
And I'm Patrick.
And that's our sound guy, Joe.
Hello, hello.
I'd like to start off this episode by saying that this episode was a requested episode from a very special person that I know, personally know, and I didn't pick this person because I'm biased or anything. I did not.
Okay, but
this episode was requested by Eddie Neary underscore on Instagram. Hi, Eddie. Thank you so much for participating in that Madam Raz's homework that week, whenever that was, right?
Dude, my dad's name is Eddie. Do you think it could be him?
It might be.
My dad's name is also Eddie. It could be him, too.
Holy crap.
To shortly explain how this works on how we do requested episodes is about every week, like in the middle of the week, like Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, whatever it is, on our Instagram, at Razzle Dazzle Show, we do this post that's our Madam Raz's homework. And what it is we basically just ask you a question from that week's current episode. And that's just a chance for you guys to interact with us. So by following the rules stated in that post, by following us on Instagram, by commenting, you are already given a chance to pick an episode for a future episode. It's all random. It's all chosen by random. I can guarantee that. And yeah, you get to talk
to me about which color Yoshi's better.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, green Yoshi. Whoever it was that said otherwise, I'm sorry.
Thanks, Mauro.
I can't respect your opinion.
Mauro, I respect that opinion. Thank you. Anyways, Eddie has brought us to The Legend of Korra.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
And let me get real close.
Uh-huh.
Hey, buddy. Thanks.
There you go. For those of you who don't know, this is a sequel to Avatar: The Last Airbender.
Kinda.
Taking place
70 years, I think.
70? I thought it was 50.
It's a sequel, but it can be a standalone.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. Like, you miss out on a few references.
Yes.
I can say that.
But which is like half of the show, basically. But
let's start at the beginning.
Okay.
Right?
Sure.
So, book one, Air. As usual, the Avatar, which is now Korra, needs to learn how to bend all the elements, right? She has already mastered water since she was born in the Southern Water Tribe. Mm-hmm. She's born a waterbender. She then learned earth, then mastered fire at the start of the show, and then needs to learn air. This is what this whole entire season is about. Not exactly, but yes.
Which I appreciate, because it doesn't take us in that direction of, oh, season one, yes, she has to learn this element. Season two, she has to learn this one. We already saw that with Avatar.
Yes.
And I thought that was a good expansion on that, just to be like, oh, she's already mastered all three by episode one.
Yes.
So
she already conquered so much of being an Avatar that, you know, she has room.
It serves as a great fast forward, because like a lot of people would want like a fast forward because they're like, hey, I want to see Aang as a teen, I want to see benders as teens,
right?
And then they flip the switch and they're like, well, you could have had Aang as a teen, but how about having the next Avatar? Because at the time, the people have been growing up with Avatar. At this, they were kids when the show started, and the show catered to kids, and then by the end of the show, they were preteens, and the show catered to preteens.
Yeah.
And now everyone wants this teen-oriented thing, so they can continue loving their show, and they delivered, I feel, and it's great.
Yes. Korra, already as a character, like when she shows up, when she is introduced as a baby, baby Korra is so cute. I love her attitude. She's like, I'm the Avatar, and you gotta deal with it. That's basically like
the character.
Yeah. That's like, yes, she is stubborn, headstrong, heated, or not heated. She has a lot of energy, and
she's got
is
a temper.
Powerful temper. Yeah, she does have a temper, but she does learn how to deal with that later. But she
Kinda.
Is powerful. She's a powerful female lead, and like physically as a character, she is freaking great, dude. I love.
It's one of the first things I was like, I was really like, hyped about with
yes.
the show, because like, growing up, every single protagonist was a dude. The only protagonists that weren't dudes were very clearly meant to be chicks,
right.
With few exceptions. Especially in cartoons, very, very, very few exceptions. And like the ones who are the protagonists who are chicks are in shows meant for girls or whatever.
Targeted towards a certain demographic, I guess.
Yeah.
This and Korra is targeted to a broader...
It's not a girl character for girls. It's a girl character because girl characters can exist.
Yeah, this is not like Sailor Moon. And this is not like Dragon Ball, you know? Like, Sailor Moon was pointed towards girls for females, and Dragon Ball was pointed towards males, boys. This show, anybody, everybody can come in, watch it, and love it. You know, I mean, again, we have two strong female protagonists, Korra, of course, and
Asami.
And then we have the two male protagonists, Bolin and Mako, which, you know,
they're all dope
already. Like, they're
all great characters.
They come in contrast with each other in some sort of way.
And I like how none of them are like, like, you'll have Bolin, who's comic relief, but we don't start out with like
he's
what we have.
Like the Sokka.
Almost, but what I was going to say is that, like, with Avatar, Sokka was the comic relief, but he was also the butt of all the jokes.
Yeah.
And there were very few jokes until, like, later on in the seasons where they weren't just making fun of Sokka.
Right.
And then this one, none of them are really made fun of more than the other. They all have their things that make them awkward and fun to make
they
fun
all
of.
Have
and
their
they
quirks.
And they all have the things that make them dope.
They all have their own unique personality, and the show really, like, dives into it. Now, I do want to say this. Spoiler warning for the entirety of Korra, because I don't care. I want to talk about everything.
Mm-hmm. Understandable.
Season one, of course, it's book one air, right? She needs to learn airbending, of course. But there's also another thing coming. This waterbender pretending to be a non-bender named Aman.
Well, they portray it at first as just some magical dude.
That's what I'm saying. He's portrayed as a dude, right? Not a bender. Like, because he's the leader of this thing called the Equalists, who are, like, down with benders or whatever,
we don't
right?
like you, bender people. Yeah.
And he has this power to take away other people's bending.
And that causes mass confusion, because the only person we ever see that is Aang. Avatar Aang. And his whole thing is, like, the spirits have talked to me and said that all the benders need to go away, and I have these powers.
Yeah. He says in like, the rally in episode 4 or something, that the spirits have given me this power, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that's already, like, weird. And when I first saw it, I was like, what the heck? Who are you to come in right after Aang, like, demonstrates his awesome ability? Like, you are just full of it, sir. I don't believe you one sec, mainly because of how different the process was for Aang taking away Ozai's bending, spoilers, and how Aman does it. Because with Aang, there's like a giant pillar of light and stuff like that, right?
It takes a while. Aman just kind of hits your head button and there goes your bending.
And then there's a fast zoom, and then you're like, and then you fall over.
It's weird, but then again, that being the choice of a villain, or not a villain, an antagonist for the first season of this show.
Great.
I don't think there's a better way to start this off.
Well, yeah.
By being a threat to the Avatar.
Yeah. Oh, of course. It's like a threat to the Avatar, but also not.
Also to the world, of course.
But it's like both at the same time. Whereas a lot of the other villains, they'll tend to just be a threat solely to the world.
Yeah.
This one poses a threat to both the world and just the Avatar with its job. And then later on, the other seasons will play onto that as well.
Not only is Aman a powerful character, like, of his skills, what he can do, but he's smart.
He's probably one of the smartest.
He is very political. He knows
how to control people.
How to manipulate. He knows when's the right time to execute his plans and stuff. Like, when Korra challenged him to a duel at midnight at Avatar Aang's statue, Aman, like, captured her and stuff, and he was like, yes, our battle is inevitable, but it's premature now. You know? And he stated the reason why he doesn't want to fight her yet. Because if he takes away her bending,
she'll be a martyr.
Exactly. And then, how freaking smart is that dude?
But keep in mind later, it's even smarter, not just as a character, but as a character, as writing.
Yes.
That ends up playing a factor into the story when he starts getting more and more frustrated as he starts to lose later on in the end of this
season. That is true.
Season. And it gets to a point where he doesn't care about that anymore because the Avatar's starting to get in his way so much that he just tries to do it.
And he becomes more and more unhinged. Yes. And his reveal as a fraud, being yes. both a bender and having lied about his origin story with the scar coming off because it's cheap paint.
Origin story.
Great.
Speaking of that, he was the son of the, at the moment, most powerful bloodbender in the world.
There was world building that also played a yes. factor into this. A really good part of this show is just how much world building you can clearly see.
A good example of that is the secondary antagonist. Mm-hmm. What's his name?
Unalaq.
Korra's
uncle.
No, that's not who I'm talking about.
No, in we're not talking about Unalaq. We're talking about the Water Tribe.
Ahmad's brother.
He wasn't Water Tribe. He was part of Republic City, but Ooh. He wore water clothing.
Yeah, the freaking politician,
the,
dude.
The noble. You know? I thought he was a noble.
There you go. Tarlaq.
They love their ox.
Yeah, right? Him being like a secondary antagonist, being already politically empowered, right?
Yeah.
Manipulating Korra to joining his strike force to take down Ahmad or whatever, you know, getting what he wants. And then Korra was like, actually found out, hey, you're actually a bad guy too. You know, there's a lot of layers going on already in season one.
Yeah, and
already in season
one. There's also the factor of something I you almost never see is a protagonist that's actually scared of the antagonist played correctly.
There you go.
And that plays is a big huge part. That's like multi episode arc when it comes to Korra.
Season arcs.
That's season arcs where it ends up this person is a teenager and they're going against super powerful adults. They're barely lived their lives and you have these people who have been planning for these moments their entire lives going against her.
Yeah.
And it's obviously this person's going to be scared. I mean, you have it, the most scary thing you've done is fight a bunch of people who have no intent to kill you, and then that's suddenly true. Everyone's trying to either take away your bending or kill you or both.
Yeah, Ahmad got a giant gathering, a giant mass of people following him. Then the Avatar, she's fresh off the boat technically, since she just got to Republic City. She doesn't have a good backing yet. She is powerful, but she's not at her full potential yet. And one thing that I love about Korra, the show as a whole, is that this show takes the fundamentals of the elements and takes it a step further. Like Avatar: The Last Airbender, that show was, you know, introducing, hey, these people can bend water, earth, fire, air, can do all this crazy stuff, and we got little touches of subcategories, sub elements, mm-hmm. like metal, blood, lightning, right? We were introduced to all that stuff, to what's supposed to be the norm in the first show, Avatar.
In the second show, they expand that.
They push it a long shot.
You start getting lava bending later on.
Yes.
You get just...
We got a whole clan of metal benders thanks to Toph.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Her daughter, both of her daughters are exquisite metal benders.
Yeah.
Which then Korra then learns how to do so. She becomes the first metal bending Avatar. How freaking crazy is that?
It's pretty dope.
And that's not the only thing they expand upon, not just the elements. Okay? This is getting to season two, my favorite season.
My least favorite.
Well, before we bounce from season one, just one more thing I want to point out, how well done pro bending was. Like,
yeah, I love that.
If you are a sports fan, there are certain things of sports that you like. For me, it's plays. I like seeing individual performances, like someone really popping off, or teamwork plays, people working together to go against the odds stacked against them. But pro bending captures that perfectly in a lot of different scenes where either you have scenes where the winning people are pressing the advantage, that's something you can see in sports, and they do little subtleties in pro bending to show that, is what the added commentary from the commentator ends up adding to that even more.
The commentator is great.
And you also have, like, you have luck-based plays that happen.
Yeah.
Like when Korra has them all accidentally line up and she knocks them off the end.
Like a kebab.
Yeah. Like, you think that, oh, that wouldn't happen because, you know, that's just luck-based whatever. But that stuff, luck-based plays happen in sports all the time.
Yeah.
It's insanely about.
And that goes back to your world-building that you were talking about. This just shows that the creators of this show went in detail on creating this game.
Yeah, it wasn't just like, hey, we have this sport. Watch this animation of Benders fighting. It's actually as if the.
It's not like an Agni Kai or anything.
There are rules.
Limitations.
They have, it's very clearly like
thought out.
Yeah, and it's written well. And yes. It captures sport in animation, which is something very, very few shows get.
Yeah.
It's one of the reasons why people love Hunter x Hunter so much, the anime, because you have the moments where they play games. Sometimes lives are at stake in these games, but they play games and they play stick to the rules,
mm-hmm.
and the scenes are played out like a sport. And Pro Bending played that little chord in my heart because I love sports cartoons. I friggin' Haikyuu, the anime was like volleyball. I absolutely adore. And so having Pro Bending be this other little sports cartoon thing, it's not a real sport, but you can still see that it's like it can be thought as a sport.
It's important in this world.
Yeah,
and it acts as a doorway to Korra learning airbending.
Yeah,
in a sense.
With the leaf stance, whatever.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Now, going to season two,
she ends up getting airbending.
Yeah, she does. Yeah. Of course she does.
It's great because Amon takes away her bending, but then it's like, oh, actually, you have air, and then takes her out. But now she only has air.
He takes away all the bending that she knew at that time. Not counting for airbending.
Which she then gains and then beats him. But then there's a little period of time where she only has air, and that kind of really gets to her. But then she finally gets the little spiritual avatar help, which dives into the second, which is a great transition into the second season.
See,
they have really good transitions.
One thing I love, about transitions, from wherever they end off on one season, it plays a role in the next.
Yeah.
Now, with Korra, she is not spiritually connected as Aang was, from the start. That's like a mental roadblock for her, or whatever, a roadblock for her. And at the end of the season one, she finally gets to connect with Aang. Aang shows her how to restore bending.
And almost connect to her spiritual side.
It got there, right?
Yeah.
And again, that's transitioning to
book two,
season two.
Spirits.
I love this season because the entire time I'm watching Avatar, the Last Airbender, I was wondering, okay, what does it mean to be an Avatar?
Like, why is this a part of the world? Is a big question.
How did it start? Why did it start? And why is it the way it is?
Yeah, and then we get a lot of good explanation. We get explanation on one of the big plot points that kind of was almost like an ex machina in Avatar, mm-hmm. or The Last Airbender, where you have the lion turtle. The lion turtle seemed like an ex machina at the time when I was watching Avatar, because I was like, well, it just comes in. It's especially like, oh, lion turtle. But then they add to it, and they're like, oh, well, lion turtles are the sources of bending.
Yes.
Therefore, that's why the lion turtle is able to help him. And you go, and they're connected to the Avatar in a way. And they're like, oh.
Yeah, there's an arc in season two where it shows off how this all started.
Two episodes of just the origin.
First Avatar. Like, we get to see Wan, the first Avatar, going through this whole journey on becoming the Avatar, right?
And it's a synopsis of what, and it ends up showing like a sort of summary of what the Avatar is supposed to be.
Yes.
Which is the bridge between spirit world and real world.
Which in the past they were together. They were connected.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They sort of as this bridge negotiator, making sure everyone's at peace,
mm-hmm.
but also serving as that for people as well.
Yes, it's a give and take. It's got to be for both sides. And through this arc, we get to learn, for example, why is the sequence of being the Avatar the way it is? Like, it starts off firebending because Wan got that element first. Then he got airbending. Then he got waterbending. Then lastly, he got earthbending. That explains why the cycle is the way it is.
Yeah.
We get to understand why the Avatar reincarnates, because of a spirit, the light spirit, Rava.
Rava, and the dichotomy of Rava and Vatu that makes...
Vatu. That's his name.
I was going to say Vishnu, but that's the Indian religion.
Yeah, that's something else.
Where you have this dichotomy of light and dark, where they're both kind of constantly fighting to constantly stay even. Yang. The moment that fight starts, darkness starts to take over.
Yeah.
But then in the final fight, bouncing totally over, where it ends up being, there was a brief mention early on, I believe, about how there can't be no light.
Yeah, of course not.
And so when Arava gets destroyed, there's that absence of something that's supposed to be there. You have this large, powerful dark figure, but there has to be light. So friggin' what comes down, smacking down? It's Korra with lots of spiritual whatever. She turns to a giant freaking thing, and you have basically a giant mech fight in your in your avatar.
It finished off with a giant kaiju fight, and when I first watched it, I was watching it with you, Joe. We watched this episode together, and
watched all of them together.
We did, and that came out of left field, and I was going nuts.
In the best
and I'm like,
way.
Yeah, and I was like, what?
Because we were
what is happening?
I was totally like, all right, so next season's going to be like, because how Avatar did it in Last Airbender is it's book one ends in a good ending, book two ends really sad ending, Aang's kind of in a rough place, and then he comes back.
Kind of like
I saw
original trilogy.
Yeah, so I saw that Korra was losing and they were nearing the end of the season. I'm like, oh, okay, this is where we lose.
Nope.
And at the start of the next season.
Nope.
Nope. Magic spirit powers.
Now, to talk about Korra and like what she's been going through in this season, she's dealing with her own tribe, Southern and Northern Water Tribes, going to a civil war.
She's dealing with...
Her own family is divided, literally, because Unalaq, the main antagonist here, is
her uncle.
The leader, not only her uncle, the leader of the Northern Water Tribe, and he wants to take over the South.
Well, he technically does control the South, because the chief of the North Tribe is the chief of the Water Tribe.
Yes, yes. And then, while her dealing with all that, she is trying to connect to her spiritual avatar-ness.
And she's going through some relationship troubles.
I mean, okay. That's like subplot. That's not all that important, I don't think.
Yeah, first, second season, it's subplot, but people want to see it.
I mean, yeah.
People want to see it. And I think it's actually... teen shows don't have good... realistic romance plots
this
a lot.
I think this was.
Watch a Disney movie of any sort for teen plot, and it's as if it's some 80-year-old man who's never talked to someone younger, 5 years or younger than him, who wrote some script for how he believes teens act.
Yeah.
But then Korra, it's actually like this is what people do.
It's relatable.
This is real. Like, this is situations you can find yourself in.
Yeah.
And the way people respond is, frankly, a good, healthy way to respond to these situations where they don't want to not be friends in this whole goofy relationship stuff that happens. But they're also like, it is also awkward relationship stuff. And they kind of go through that dichotomy in a way that makes sense, is real. And I like it. It ends up, it's not something you get a lot in cartoons and media in general, because people don't understand. There was a long period of time where there was no understanding of teenagers in their own media.
Right.
The reasons why people... It was hard to connect to a lot of stuff. Like, there was that period, mid-2000s to 2012, or 2010-ish, where there was nothing really for us.
Yeah, because that's where, like, kids are changing. This is the new generation.
Yeah.
They don't... Adults at that time, they don't really know what's happening.
But now,
with us.
And then Avatar to me is like one of those first pieces where you finally
it got pretty well.
Yeah.
You know? But for season two, just to like get to the end of it, she ends up bringing balance that not only in herself, but she finally gets to connect with her spirit, the Avatar spirit, Rava, you know, literally connecting with her. She opens the portals from the spirit world and the physical world. She breaks the barrier.
Yeah.
You know, she brings balance, and she is the bridge, like what the Avatar is supposed to do. But as a consequence, like, there's always a consequence when it comes to these things. She, in the last battle against Vatu, Unalaq and Vatu, because they morphed together, they sucked out Rava from Korra.
and then slapped her around.
Beat her up, and that, in turn, disconnecting the past lives with her. Now, from what I see on the internet, that's like a major red flag for a lot of fans who grew up with Avatar, The Last Airbender. But, objection, I say. The argument I will bring up for that is, in this season, we were introduced to Wan, the first Avatar, right? 10,000 years later, we get to Korra. And, you know, the main deal that Wan was dealing with the whole convergence thing, whatever it was, you know, harmonic
convergence.
There you go. He was dealing with that. He was the first one to deal with it, right? First Avatar to deal with that. Then 10,000 years later, because it happens every 10,000 years, now that comes again.
She has to deal with it again.
Now, not only was the cycle broken for the previous Avatars, but it also started anew. 10,000 years later, we got a new Avatar who is now the first one who is taking, not I don't want to say taking the place of Wan, but is doing what he did. It's like
expanding on his decision almost. Symbolism. Because she almost changes the way he did things, right?
Exactly.
Before he saw Wan close it off because he saw spirits and humans didn't really get along.
Yeah.
But then she meets with, in season two, she meets with Iroh, who's living in the spirit world.
Yes.
She has Tenzin's daughter.
Yep. Who's spiritually connected.
Who really likes the spirit world.
Yeah.
And then she kind of comes to this decision where she's like, ultimately...
Should she open the bridge? Like, should she... bring down the drawbridge and let these two worlds meet again. I think she made a great decision.
Yeah, and then she also made a new little spirit portal thing in Republic City.
Later on.
No, it's not in season.
Not season four.
Season four?
That's season four.
Oh, yeah.
Already, halfway through this show, right? Avatar Korra is, in my opinion, already one of the best Avatars we have ever seen. Including Aang, Roku, Kiyoshi.
Well, because what Aang was dealing with threats to humanity.
Mm-hmm.
The
Fire Nation.
All avatars except for Wan are dealing with threats to humanity.
Yeah.
Wan and Korra have to deal with threats to existence.
To everything.
To life.
Everything.
And then...
And there's a give and take. Again, her losing her past connections to the previous avatars and, you know, bringing... actual balance.
Yeah.
Doing her actual job as the Avatar.
And then, once again, Unalaq being a great
Unalaq
bad guy.
Being a really good bad guy, and I just think the whole concept of him fusing with Vatu is amazing. It's awesome. The dark Avatar, quote-unquote. I'm not sure about the title, but it's still cool.
We'll work on it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Freaking purple lasers.
It's cool.
It is cool.
A cool freaking kaiju fight in this... different universes.
But they didn't.
They didn't. Concept.
They also didn't do because they used that sort of harmonic convergence thing.
Yeah.
To not do what a lot of, in my opinion, it's lazy. It's not lazy. It's just unfortunate writing where you end up having that you're constantly upscaling power. So then you have like that cap. Or like for example, Naruto keeps getting stronger and stronger and stronger.
Mm-hmm.
Till at some point, it's really just absurd. Absurd everything they do.
Yeah.
But Avatar, both in Last Airbender and this one, have a good job of keeping it to where it's always entertaining.
I think.
At Last Airbender, as soon as Aang reached peak bender, the thing's over.
Yeah.
The show's over.
See, what I have to say, I'm glad you brought that up. I'm so glad you brought that up. With Avatar, it went from Zuko / Zhao to Azula to Ozai. It's just going up the ranks, literal ranks in the Empire. And that's all that Aang did, which is great. You know, that I'm not trying to downplay that or anything.
Yeah.
But with Korra, I see it as a little problem. If there was only two seasons, perfect, right? If it was just these two seasons with somebody who can take away bending and then, you know, freaking, what would you call him, the devil yesterday?
Yeah.
You know, an Avengers-level threat, that's great. But then I think kind of downscales after.
It does downscale, but the reason why it has that harmonic convergence thing and...
Mm-hmm.
I think it ends up kind of being good because you have this big event which needs to be drastic that only happens once in 10,000 years.
Yes.
And it's not like they keep you at the expectation where Korra is always going to be a super powerful light being when she wants to be.
Mm-hmm.
That was a one-time thing. That's over now. and then it goes back to what it was, and the other antagonists end up being threatening in their own different ways. Like, we'll Zaheer. Jump into them. Yeah, it was Zaheer and...
Book three, change.
Zaheer and book four's girl, they
Kuvira.
Kuvira, they both serve as their own different types of threat. But before, as we reach this halfway point, let's hop into the game.
Let's do it.
Okay.
All right. So, this is Tirzu Avatar Edition. For those of you who like YouTube, there's a YouTube channel called Tirzu, which tears animals. And then... If you watch Avatar, you know that animals serve in various different combinations in this world, all of them. You have your turtle ducks. You have your polar bear dogs.
Turtle ducks are my favorite.
So this game is, I give you a tier from S tier being top tier to F tier, and you give me an animal combination that would be there. It could be part of the show, or it could be just one you make up. Do you guys want to start from the bottom and go up, which I feel is better, or do you want to start from the top and go
down? Let's do it.
Bottom?
Okay.
All right. So first off, we got F tier. What are just two different animals that you feel?
Bat wolves.
Bat wolves?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Spider fly.
What
is it?
Well, here, what does it eat?
Itself. It does.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
Aang was like, all life is precious, even the spider fly caught in its own web. Like, what a dumb animal. Come on, man.
What is this with bat wolves? I think that'd be pretty good because they'd be like the best things in the night, right?
No, because like the bat wolves in season one, they suck. They're prissy. I'm talking about like the team.
The team.
Yeah, that's why. That's why. Because
I'll take that as
they represent themselves as a bat wolf, and I'm like, okay, you just ruined it for me.
You don't like bat wolves because of the pro bending team?
Yes. Okay. Yes, because they're jerks.
I like it. The dude ends up playing saxophone at what's his name's wedding.
I know.
All right, next up we got C tier. Equals amounts of pros and cons, kind of a neutral.
Polar bear dog?
I think that's advantageous. You just have a really strong dog.
I would say Pabu. Fire ferret.
Fire ferret?
I don't like Naga's design. I'm gonna be honest.
I'm gonna fight.
But it has its uses.
It does.
So I don't think it's C tier.
I don't think it's B tier. Naga is B tier.
B tier? I can say B tier.
Yeah, I'd say that.
All right, we're bouncing tiers again. Yeah. And we're up at A tier where pros Appa. Outweigh the cons. It's a straight up improvement Appa. To singular. Well, that a doesn't count. The bending ones don't count.
So no badger moles?
Well, badger moles purely as the concept of. A badger mole, right?
Okay.
But not badger moles in the sense that they can earthbend.
Right.
I hate this game. I hate this now.
What was that thing that June had? The dog mole thing?
Yeah. That was cool.
Mm-hmm.
That's cool.
Which one's June?
The bounty hunter Zuko hires to find the Avatar.
Oh, yeah.
That's really super cool. Strong smelling thing.
You know what? No, go ahead.
Well, I think that's A tier.
Yeah, that is A tier.
Honestly, A-tier. I would consider, because there is S tier, which is literal monster.
Mm-hmm.
I think that one's S tier.
Okay.
Yeah.
So let's go to S tier.
An A tier.
For you?
It's just a great idea.
Uh-huh.
You have shark whale shark, but like actually. An actual giant shark whale.
I got you.
Like a megalodon, basically.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's what I'm thinking. But that also might be S tier.
But
it has to eat a lot of food, so maybe it's not S tier. But anyway, S tier.
Uh-huh.
Bear.
Just a
Bosco.
Bosco.
He's
just a bear.
Just a bear.
He's just a bear.
That's the joke.
Yeah.
Just a bear.
Yeah. Okay. Turtle duck S tier, for sure.
Turtle duck S tier.
Even lion turtle. You know, lion turtles are.
It's a spirit.
Lion turtles. Well, they're. I mean, even
no, that counts as bending.
A lion, like top tier of the.
That counts as bending, though.
But even if you take away its spiritual powers, bending powers, right? That still ends up being a lion with a turtle shell.
Yeah,
it's just an invincible lion.
It's basically Torterra, since their city's on their backs. You know, it's Torterra. That's what a lion turtle is.
Yeah, but anyway, that's the game.
I love it.
Appa would be top S plus plus.
Yeah, exactly. You can't.
If you added bending and spirituality.
Momo. We didn't bring up Momo.
Momo's S tier. Momo's S tier.
Momo's S tier. Mm, I don't know about that.
Fight me.
F tier.
Nah,
also,
man.
By the way, we just hit 35 minutes.
Let's do it. Let's keep going. Let's keep going.
Okay, I'm calling it out.
I'm the one editing. I'm calling it.
All right. Season three. New threat. Except we're not immediately introduced to this threat like the other seasons. Unalaq's kind of there as soon as the season starts. Amon's mentioned in the first episode, and you see mention of the Equalist, but Zaheer isn't really thrown in right away, I'm pretty
There's
sure.
There's that build-up. No.
Look.
There's more airbenders
one
now.
One thing I love about change, it comes to transition again. Transition from season to season. The harmonic convergence and the whole bringing balance to the world again, you know?
Oh, there's spirits everywhere.
Comes into book three, change. What's changed?
Spirits everywhere.
There, not just that, but thanks to harmonic convergence, there are normal people who become airbenders.
Oh, yeah. That starts. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I totally forgot about
Dude, thanks to Korra,
airbending doesn't die.
She brought back airbending. She brought back the Air Nation.
So that pros and cons. Lose the Avatar past lives, but Air Nation's
starting
back.
Starting anew.
And this season explores... this season explores that a lot of... You're not always going to be liked by everyone. This is the season that really explores that. Because you have her making... The season doesn't start with the Zaheer threat.
No.
It starts with her solving the problems that happen because spirits are now in the world.
Spirits are now in the world. These new airbenders are popping up. And not only is airbending coming back a good thing, but that's what makes... Or that's what helps makes...
That's the catalyst.
Yeah. That's what helps makes the antagonist... as dangerous as he is.
He was a guy who was obsessed with airbending.
Yep.
And then became an airbender.
Yep.
And then that ends up being what gives him his... He's basically already a pro bender, right?
Yes.
But you can see he's not a master.
No,
because
not
when
yet.
Because not yet. But when he's fighting Tenzin, just one-on-one, Tenzin's whooping him, bro. Yeah.
But at least he stood a chance.
Yeah, he stood a chance, which is more than any other airbender. But... he also is getting whooped, which is that what another thing I really liked about the show is that sort of the better people are better. And what I wanted to mention earlier, but I forgot, is the better people are better not because they're better benders. They're more creative benders, which is something that's sick. It's really shown in the season because
that's expanding the fundamentals of bending.
Yeah.
That's what I was talking about.
Tenzin uses air as a sort of like ranged weapon, but also as a support to the people around him. He ends up being the sort of like support guy.
Yeah, that's what it comes down to.
The Toph's daughter, Lin. Police chief, Lin.
She's defense.
Lu and Sue again.
No, she is mobility like crazy. She's kind of defense, but she's mobility. Yeah. She's
straight
flying
out of,
around.
Straight out of Attack on Titan.
Straight out of Attack on Titan, dude. I love it. And you just have all these people. The people who are really good at bending are not the people who have really... There are the people who are just really strong at bending. Like, the people who have the unique forms, like the explosive eye...
Combustion.
The combustion bender, the lava bender.
Which got introduced here.
Yeah.
Yeah, I loved Zaheer's posse because we saw a bunch of different branches of the elements. Kind of like an evil team Avatar.
Yeah.
And even the waterbending didn't get its unusual style. The girl still had one unique thing, being that she had no arms.
She was disabled.
She was,
and she was still whooping butt.
And two,
and I love that.
The way every other waterbender did things when there's not a lot of water around is they would keep a swirl of water around them or somehow flowing around them. She just had them attached to her arms. So she didn't have, like, it's almost like she doesn't have to focus on the thing. It's more so just a part of her, which is sick. It ends up making her stronger. Instead of weaker, like Tenzin's sister, Kaya. She's a master bender, but she gets whooped by the other water chick. So, yeah, you see a lot of that in the season, but it's a constant thing throughout of just like the better bender is the more creative bender.
The fall of all of those villains was also very good because we see them one by one. I think the first was that water lady. Getting whooped by Mako because of course, what's fire gonna do against water? Lightning.
He's creative with it.
Yep.
And she has no water. He has her beat, but then she evades and gets to a place with water, and it's like, okay, well now Mako's beat. He's in a place with water, and he's a firebender, but he gets creative. He gets on a rock, shoots lightning at the pool of water. She's standing in the pool of water, not standing, but using her water arms to stand. That ultimately
it's a direct conductor.
Yeah.
To her.
Yeah.
You know. It's crazy.
And with Bolin, he ends up being the more creative one where he in essence, is just kind of winning the fight in general because he knows how to use his earthbending, but he knows how to use his lava bending, whereas the lava bending guy is only using lava bending.
Yeah. He's using a mixed.
Yeah, he Bolin ends up winning just because he wins a few fights. The guy gets mad that he can't win. And rage quits and destroys the whole place. And Bolin just eats himself out of there.
Yeah, that's true.
And Combustion Lady.
She went out the dirtiest.
The best death we've ever seen on the screen.
Dude.
That was so awesome.
The armor just closes in, and then as soon as it closes, you don't even get to hear the boom. It just cuts away.
It cuts to Zaheer turning around, being like, honey? And just the smoke of where his wife's head used to be.
Yeah.
It's the most brutal death we would get. It's great.
And that leads to Zaheer unlocking a secret technique for airbenders. Not secret, but an ancient technique for airbenders that hasn't been seen thousands of years.
His last earthly tie is lost, and he becomes able to fly because he is no longer bound to the earth.
That's crazy. That's crazy to see. And the only other time we saw that was...
We
only hear about it, but we kind of see it in season two with the first airbenders. Like they're flying on a puff of clouds, like Goku does, you know?
Yeah.
If you remember that, but regardless. But you were saying about Korra dealing with, like, the consequences of her actions, of, you know, bringing the spirits back.
Yeah, the initial story of the show...
Change.
...is just... It's not Zaheer. Zaheer ends up being a threat later. Yeah, it's almost as if it's two seasons and it's in one.
Yeah.
Where you have the fixing the spirit world, or fixing the problems that... intertwining the spirit world has, and then fixing the problem that intertwining the spirit world has with Zaheer.
Exactly. See, one thing I love about that is Korra has to be like, listen, guys, you know, to the people in the world, this is going to be our new normal. Like, this is going to happen, and it's going to stay like this. So we all have to change and adapt, you know? We got to get used to this, and this is just going to be a new normal, and you got to deal with it. Now, new normal... going towards, yes, there are more spirits coming to this earth, new benders popping up and new threats.
I also really liked character-wise the thing with Lin and her sister.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And her mom.
Right.
In season four, where the show ends up, the show starts, like, it kind of dived into it with what's the Future Industries girl's name?
Julie?
No.
Asami.
Asami. Mm. Asami has her whole thing, but it's kind of a minor plot. But this is the first time where we really get a big focus on just family can be weird.
Mm-hmm.
And it explores that rather than dives away from that. Because, like, it's
introduced in season two because of Korra and her family dealing with the Water Tribe stuff, and it continues onwards with Toph and her family.
Yeah. Season two shows that families can be good.
Yes.
Because despite the suspicions that Korra has of her dad ends up staying noble and ends up being good.
Yeah.
It also shows how family can be bad. Things can be awkward or things can be straight
That's
up
true.
Bad in the case of season four. But but they all, in everything, what I really love is every single social issue that characters have, they end up at least starting to work it out.
Yes.
Which is...
I think Korra does an amazing job at balancing... her relationships with Team Avatar, you know, with Mako, Bolin, Asami, like, yeah, they've had, like, interactions with each other, but they're still mature enough to be like, we're still friends. We can get through this, you know? If we just don't let that come between us, then we can get through anything.
Yeah.
And I think this version of Team Avatar is just makes them a lot stronger for that.
And there's a lot more characters for you to have a lot more social dynamics.
Yes.
And shows these different ways where it ends up being that every single solution is just seeing that both people care about each other mm-hmm. and understanding that in order to mend the relationship. There they do go. It in their own different ways.
Yeah.
But there's no, like, one answer to this is how you solve your family issue.
And that's real, though. That's in real life, that's apparent.
Whereas, like, a lot of shows that I grew up with, it's always like it's either escapism. We don't talk about parents. We don't talk about family. We just talk about friends and fun and whatever. Or it's when it dives into those situations, it gets it wrong.
That's real.
And then so you finally have the show that really like shows like if you want to like if you like your friends, work with them, not against them.
Korra really evolves as a character, especially in this season, I think. Like, again, her relationships with her friends, her relationship with official stuff, like the people in Republic City.
The president and all
the
that.
The president, yeah. She's like, listen, I'm the Avatar. I know what I need to do, and I'm going to do it for the greater good, for the sake of this world and the spirit world. Like, that's her job. She knows her job. She knows what she needs to do.
And
she has another responsibility of bringing back, rebuilding the Air Nation. Already, she's proving her worth as the Avatar.
Yeah, and there's also this big essence of what we mentioned earlier in the season, where it's her learning that she can't please everyone.
That's true.
Where the first arc, you have her going to the Airbenders, and basically none of them want to go, and the only one who wants to go is using them, like using just the fact that you can airbend and the fact that he has resources now to be an airbender, just be a thief.
Yeah.
But he ends up, whatever his name is,
Kai
ends up learning and getting better, and he's one of my favorite characters.
It's cute.
Because it's a good case of like...
Underdog?
No, it's someone who grows up not knowing better, and this grows up with that lifestyle where things are wrong. And you don't, with people like that, you can't just say like, you have to be forgiving. Because if someone grows, like, if it's a kid growing up as a thief because that's the way he needs to be in order to live a not sucky life somewhere, then when you're like, hey, that stuff is wrong, they're going to be like, they're antagonistic or they just ignore you.
Yeah.
They think you don't know better. But then he learns that what he's doing is an act of harm to himself, but he also sees, he doesn't really see the harm it does to others, but he sees the harm it can bring to himself, for that, like, he gets lots of consequences for running around doing his own thing.
Yeah, and one consequence was Bolin and Mako being imprisoned by Zaheer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that's where he really, like, changed. That's where his coin flipped.
Yeah.
You know, and that's where he changed his whole...
And then he ends up being...
Change, you know?
He ends up being a moral character.
Yes.
When it comes to season four, it's him Bolin's girlfriend...
Opal.
Opal, who end up being, like...
I love Opal.
The moral compass in the first situation we run into.
I love Opal.
I think the best episode of the show is in season four.
Yes,
Korra Alone.
Let's talk about it.
It was, like, one of the first...
Korra Alone? That sounds
episode
familiar.
Episode 2 or episode... Yeah. It's a play on Zuko Alone.
Let's talk about it.
So, it begins, like, Tenzin and Bolin and the Team Avatar, like, we don't know where Korra is. We thought she was with you. No, I thought she was with you. And we find out that she's cut her hair. She has a whole other...
I love her new style.
New design.
I love it.
And she's just going around...
with some PTSD.
Yes.
She is. And she's just trying to find her own way.
Which, I mean,
PTSD
understandable.
All those three threats that she has already dealt
with.
She's
a teenager who's had to save, like, countless lives more than three times.
Save all of existence.
Yeah.
Before she was done with puberty.
Yeah.
And then she almost died every single time.
She got poisoned by mercury.
She got poisoned by mercury.
And that
she got,
hindered her avatar
She got
state.
her soul slapped.
Yes.
She got her bending taken away.
Jinx, you owe me a soda.
She's got some PTSD. Yes.
And they handle that very well.
Yes.
Because with Aang and Ozai, he kind of just got over it. There was that one episode when he was having nightmares, and he was like, you know what?
I'm the one wearing the pants now, Ozai.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay.
But it's meant for kids. And you can really see that there. But this is really developing is like... It's
developing Korra as a character.
The target audience...
she has a weakness.
Yeah, the target audience is teenagers, and teenagers need more than just... encouragement.
Yes.
They need to fully understand the situation they're in.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, you encourage a teenager, it's great, and you should, but it won't always solve their problems.
There's a fall and rise for everything. And this is, at the beginning of season four, that's her real fall.
Mm-hmm.
Like, her biggest fall into depression and stuff like that. Then, after, like, hitting her lowest low, she meets Toph, and Toph's like, listen.
Toph is Yoda.
Yeah, Toph is Yoda.
Toph, she's in the swamp.
Dagobah.
You know, helps her with
Toph
her bending.
Is like, listen, you're the freaking Avatar. Look at all the things you have done. Now, look into your past. Analyze and accept what has happened. And move on.
Well, throughout the season, every single character that she runs into for that moral support to help her get her past her PTSD are all ones that showed the benefit or talked to her about the benefit of what she does. When she talks to Tenzin and Asami, it was toward near the end of the season. When they talk to her, she keeps bringing up like, "Yeah, I did this, and look at all these bad things that happened." But the friends are there, friend or mentor is there to encourage them by being like, "Yeah, but look at the good things you did. There will be bad that comes. There's no correct answer. There's no good life, but there's good and bad in life, and it's accepting that."
Yeah, and that's something that Korra's really understood throughout the course of this show, is that, hey, people make mistakes, and as long as you learn from them and move past them, then that makes you a better person. Yeah. Now, continuing with season four.
My problem with season four is that the villain kind of comes out of nowhere. I think she was a good villain. I think Kuvira is kind of threatening, but she was like, oh, this captain we were this nobody we were introduced to in season three ends up being kind of like earthbending.
Well, I think, and there's no source for this, but it's more so just from what I understand of film /
cinematography,
TV, is that I think it's a case of producers wanting another season.
Yeah.
And them using the hand they have to make something at least good. Because first one was a trilogy. I wouldn't doubt that that Legend of Korra. And this, of course, is just total assumptions.
It could be done just two seasons.
Yeah, it could have been done just two seasons. They did it in three, which spectacular seasons. I think it was just a push for another season. Yeah. And they're like, well, we technically can do that. They won't be as good.
Yeah.
And the production and the producers were probably like, if people love it, make it. And so. Yeah. I think that's what it was, which it wasn't necessarily a bad season. It just wasn't needed.
I think season three is more like season one, season two, great pillars, right? Then season three, it's like a build up to season four.
So you kind of consider it more so season three and four kind of tie into each other.
Yes, extremely, because
Zaheer ends up also playing a factor in season four.
Yes, where everything that has happened in season three has a just about direct correlation to what's going on in season four, you know?
Yeah.
Like, all the events lead up to this balance. Finding the balance from all the changes in season three, finding the balance in season four to coexist with everybody, with everything, with all the nations being there for each other regardless.
Yeah.
You know? Yes, we have this dictator who's like, I'm going to bring all the Earth...
She's promising prosperity, but at the cost of
freedom.
Prosperity.
Okay.
It's prosperity at the cost of people enjoying their lives, which to me is prosperity. You want prosperity so that people can enjoy their lives. Yes. So when you take that away for prosperity, it's kind of like
it's counterintuitive.
Yeah.
Yeah. But one thing I will say, what I love about Kuvira, right?
Mm-hmm.
The bending style is sick.
Well, there's that.
The mech.
At the end, we get freaking Megatron in this show. It's a giant freaking mech with
a laser.
A giant laser gun.
All being controlled by her,
All being controlled by her.
Same purple energy bending. That Vatu shoots.
It's Megatron. It's Megatron. And the way they bring this baby down is to use the newly built Air Nation.
They use creativity.
It's
what I really like about the show is every fight is won by the smarter person.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily who's stronger, because Kuvira clearly stronger than everything Republic City has to offer.
Right.
But they outsmart her.
Yes.
Teemo gets the paint for the windows.
Milo
gets the paint. Freaking
Bolin and Mako infiltrate.
Bolin, Mako, Lin, and her sister all infiltrate and wreck.
Yeah.
Asami and her dad cut a hole. And I thought Asami's dad, that was a good redemption arc.
It shows that even awful parents...
Awful people.
Awful but still care for you.
And do the right thing.
And do the right thing in the end. And I think it's not giving hope, because a lot of people cut ties with their parents 100%.
Right.
Never to help them... They never try to get... it's perfectly understandable. I'm not going to say, like, you should do this in your parents' life, because I haven't been in those situations, so I can't give the answer.
Right.
But it's showing that, like, some parents are redeemable, because parents are people. Humans can be forgiven just as much as they cannot be forgiven.
That's true. Love is the key.
Yeah, and it shows that, like, there are people that can be redeemed. But, of course, you have, like you have the same dichotomy with the north, though it's less explored, the Northern Water Tribe kids of Unalaq.
The twins.
Yeah.
The creepy twins.
Where their dad ends up being an absolutely awful person.
Yeah.
And they kind of just, they kind of like, cut ties. I mean, frankly, if any of my parents were world-destroying terrorists, I don't think it would be really tough to forgive that.
I wouldn't send them a card.
But so they kind of, and everyone kind of accepts that decision from them. Yeah. It's like, ultimately, you don't have to forgive someone like that. But it also goes through, and it's like, yeah, but there's also Asami, who wants that fatherly connection still.
Yeah.
She can still have that if her father tries to work towards it too, and they end up both working towards that, and it's so sad to see
him sacrifice himself.
I cried tears, man.
That's true.
It was rough.
I think season 4 was a pretty good send off.
Yeah, for sure.
Kind of ambiguous end with her and Asami going into the
Korra world. And Asami going into the spirit world. Yeah,
I think their intents were pretty clear.
Yeah.
I mean, there's that too.
It's this was released at the time where you couldn't necessarily get away with that.
Want to talk about it?
I don't know. Do we? I don't feel like I'm the type of person who is in the position to talk about
it. All I'm
going to
say is I think that's great.
Oh, I 100%.
Supported 100%.
It works way better than her and Mako.
Right.
They were the two with the best connection. Though you could say that was
one thing
in terms of friendship.
One thing I love about that is it wasn't forced like it was with, you know, Mako or Bolin for that one date, but it Korra's and Asami's relationship build from season 1 to where they are now.
Yeah.
You know?
I would be okay with either ending, whether it was just them platonic or them not platonic. You know, I'd be okay with it either way.
Yeah.
It does end up being almost that, like, you don't know, but I know. I know.
You know.
Yeah. You don't do something like that if they're friends. Maybe one hand, both hands.
And then there's the comics that expand on it, you know?
Yeah.
But regardless, just to wrap all this up, Korra herself, the character, one of the in my opinion, the greatest Avatar ever. I don't care about that one meme who's like, Korra semicolon breathes, everybody semicolon, you're the worst Avatar ever. You know that meme? I totally disagree. In my opinion, I think Korra is the best Avatar ever, not only in the sense of being the Avatar, but as a character herself, all of the character growth and progression that she has gone through and ended up in.
I like Legend of Korra more than I like Avatar.
Me too.
That's what I
Me
was going to say before the show, but I was like, I should say that.
Me too.
Before I rewatched it, it was a clear Avatar is better, but I didn't really hate Korra. Now that I rewatched it with you and I can actually have someone to talk about with,
yeah,
I'm going to go ahead and say they're equal. They are not the same. They're very much not the same.
A big thing is that they both have two different target audiences.
Yes.
So that is a big factor to consider.
Because
I'm getting my sister into both shows. She's watching Avatar right now. And I literally told her, like, so at first, this isn't really going to vibe with you too much because this is a kid's show. And if you're not really into kid's shows, you're not really going to like this too much. She was like, oh, I don't really mind. And I was like, okay, so you'll like it. But when Legend of Korra hits, because she's 15 right now, 14.
Right. Right.
Man, that's bad. I should know my sister's age. Good thing she doesn't listen. But, so she's 14, 15, and that's, like, prime age for Legend of Korra.
Yeah.
That's the target demographic, so that's why I really wanted to watch her. But she needs to get that Avatar thing so she can understand the references.
I think...
The Cabbage Guy reference.
I think Korra is a lot better after watching Avatar.
Yeah.
But as a standalone... See, I never grew up with these shows. I never grew up with these shows, so I don't have any nostalgia glasses. Just as a standalone, I still think it's great. It's a great freaking show.
Oh, 100%. I was about to get her to watch Korra by itself, and then she was like, well, do I need to watch Avatar first? And I was like, not really, but
see,
if you want to.
I would encourage that.
Oh, yeah. No, I was
to understand the fundamentals.
Yeah, I was like, not really, but if you want to, it'll make it better.
Yes.
And she was like, all right. And then so we watched Avatar. Rewatching first season Avatar just made me giddy.
See, exactly. Like,
it's such like happy fun. Whereas you get into season 1 Legend of Korra and you're already dealing with some tough issues.
Exactly.
But season 1 Avatar, it's just like, ho, let's go travel the world, Avatar.
Yeah,
oh, no, man. Bad thing. Oh, we saved the day. Yeah. Oh, no, bad thing. Oh, we saved the day. Whereas Korra, it's like, oh no, bad thing. Oh gosh, things are getting worse. Oh yeah, man, yeah, everything's yeah. changing. Everything's on the line. We did it. Mm-hmm. Whereas first season Avatar is a happy, go fun adventure.
To anyone in the audience that has refused to watch Korra because of nostalgia glasses, I implore you to wipe that fog off.
Yes, remove those glasses.
It's better without nostalgia glasses.
Remove it.
It is a very good show.
Yes.
It's not the same. If you want it to be the exact same as Avatar,
This is not supposed to be Avatar
2.
It's not that. It's completely a new different thing, continuing off of what Avatar has set the groundwork for.
With love shown to the original series.
Because characters come back, we get some fan service references and stuff like that, you know?
So many. There's fan service episodes,
exactly.
Parts of episodes. Like in season 4 towards the very end where Mako just goes through his relationship with life. Oh, so good.
Now,
so good.
One thing that I do not like about Korra, we didn't get a Naga episode. Like Aang, like in Avatar, Appa got like 2-3 episodes all devoted to him or whatever. We didn't get a single Naga episode.
I wanted, you know what I wanted? I wanted an episode that explored the bad guys, like either Zuko and his sister and those two, or like Iroh, Zuko, and Aang with that one episode. Because remember that Iroh episode where it's literally just him on the day where he celebrates his son's death?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Or mourns his son's death.
Tales of Ba Sing Se. Tales of Ba Sing Se-esque mm-hmm. episode in this series.
Mm-hmm.
But if there were, I would have liked it. If there weren't, I understand.
Yeah, but it would have been so nice to have that for his sidekick dude, the electric staff guy.
Yeah.
Mustache Nightwing.
or any of the criminals.
Equalus?
The criminals with Zaheer.
Zaheer's posse.
Or the Northern Water Tribe twins.
Right.
Just those side characters, giving them that, the side bad guys, giving them that little exploration.
Just a little bit. Just a little bit.
We had with Zuko,
would have been nice.
Iroh,
would have been nice.
What's her name?
Yeah.
But, you know, at the same time, we get a lot of bad guy exploration with Kavira.
That is true.
Kavira, you really start to understand where she's coming from if you pay attention. Like, you understand why she's doing what she's doing.
Yeah.
You kind of have her backstory given, which is like a really easy way of showing it, but like you can tell that she does it out of the good. It's every one last thing I wanted to say is that all the villains, and they mentioned this in the show, they're people who have a good idea and take it too far.
Yeah, they're like Thanos.
Basically.
You know?
It's people without bending are treated unfairly.
Yeah.
Well, let's fix that. No, let's get rid of benders.
Yeah, they have a point, but it's the way they do it.
Spirit should be in the world. Therefore, I shall become Dark Avatar.
Mm.
And it's too far. Mm. Kavira, it's like, I want the Earth Nation to be not crap.
Yeah.
Whatever. And then Zaheer is just Zaheer.
And also, at the end of the day, all the villains technically get what they want.
In a way.
Because in season 1, Korra stands up for non-benders when people didn't think she would. In season 2, the spirit world and human world are one again. There's that unity. And in season 3, Zaheer's whole thing is that, listen, there's a lot of corruption going on in the Earth Kingdom. Let's take out the head.
No, he's pure anti-government.
Pure mm-hmm. anarchist.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of liberates the people in a way. At first through chaos, but then they find unity and peace through the new order, and then Kuvir, she wants unity. But she gets that unity by being the common threat everybody hates.
Yeah.
So at the end of the day, they all kind of...
There are so many just mini stories to be explored in the whole story
Legend
of Korra. And it's one of the reasons why I love the show so much. Is you love almost all the characters...
Mm-hmm.
Very few exceptions. The prince can go die for all I care. but like a lot of the characters you come to love, and they all have their stories explored, and even characters that you expected to just be stand-in assistant end up having their stories kind of dived into.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
it's,
yeah.
It, it makes it so that like everybody gets a little bit of what they want. People who love this character get what they want. People mm-hmm. who love that character get what they want. And the people who love the main characters get mm-hmm. man, some good main characters with some good arcs. Like we barely talked about Team Avatar being with Asami, Azami, Mako, and Bolin. Like, yeah. We barely touched on their whole dichotomy.
But I think we did pretty good. Then.
Yeah, we did.
I think we did pretty good in this very, very long episode. Thank you so much for everybody joining us or sticking through this. It really means a lot to us. Thank you so much for joining us on another episode of Razzle Dazzle. Please let us know what you think of this episode somewhere on the internet. Make sure to follow us on Instagram at Razzle Dazzle Show. Look out for those Madam Razz's homeworks in the future. If you follow the rules and do it, you get to have a chance to pick an episode for a future topic for a future episode and all that good stuff. So subscribe to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, rate us, do all that good stuff. And we'll catch you on the next one.
I'm still recording because I think this would be a good end card.
Do it.
Toph's second daughter, Su Yin.
Uh-huh.
The father is Sokka.
I know. This is what we're going to fight. This doubt is, it. No, it's not. It's not Sokka because why would Sokka cheat on Suki?
We don't get confirmed that they get married at all.
What?
We don't. Sokka doesn't.
To be fair, Sokka's the only one who doesn't have kids.
Yeah, but...
Listen, I have complete faith in Sokka that he will stay, you know, faithful to Suki. Because why would you give up Suki? Suki's like the greatest.
Well, you know,
we don't know what happens to Suki, so it's
we don't know what really happened to Sokka.
And if you look at like, what's Su Yin's son's name? He looks just like Sokka.
It doesn't mean anything. It doesn't mean anything because people look alike. I look like a lot of people. It just happens.
But you're not an anime character.
I.
Well, it's not anime.
All right, bye guys.